This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at LinkedIn.com/decide. That's LinkedIn.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride.
All right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
Come on, turn the radio on, it's Saturday and it won't be long.
Don't get me wrong, I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom. It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
And you know, I'm less concerned how Joe Biden stumbles and bumbles his way through describing Vladimir Putin than I am concerned about how Joe Biden behaves towards Vladimir Putin. And for the last 4 months, he has been pathetically weak. In the earliest days of his administration, President Biden extended the one arms control treaty we have left with Russia, a treaty that is badly one-sided in Russia's favor. He also is allowing Germany to finish the pipeline that's going to bring Russian gas into Germany, hooking Western Europe ever more deeply on Russian gas while harming our allies in Central and Eastern Europe.
So you thought I did that on accident. I'm doing it on purpose.
It's
I'm going to do it a lot.
I thought that was you having an idea.
Ding.
So, you know what I should do? Play sound.
I'm sure that whoever is also on this computer does that, of course, so when it's potted up, it's my radio lingo, that you don't accidentally play something you don't mean to play, like the ending credits of Romancing the Stone.
But
when I was getting ready to play Senator Tom Cotton there, I started playing it, and I didn't hear anything in the first 2 seconds, so I'm like, oops, I got to run the slider bar up on the volume. Boom. And there's Senator Tom Cotton along with a little ding, ding.
That's just us telling you we're live.
We are live.
This is not recorded. Otherwise, that would be edited out.
What's that famous famous quote from the woman who was the NBC anchor in New York back in the 90s, I think?
Oh, yes.
This is prime time television, folks.
Yes.
You know, that really happened. That was not from a comedy or a sitcom or a movie. That was live. That was real.
Didn't she kind of go on a little bit of like a rampage of what, like, she was rambling on and on about?
Yes. I've used that. I don't have that. You know what, Katie? I got to show you this during a break. One of my entire Stinger pages, like, won't come up anymore. Like,
what?
When I try to load the buttons, they're all blank. So I only have the one Stinger page, which has my things like...
You're a lion, dog face, pony soldier.
Yeah.
We the people.
But I've lost my other Stinger page that has things like Timmy on it. Yeah.
Dang.
Like the buttons, it all comes up and they're all just white.
What the heck?
These are very racist buttons.
They are.
That's the problem.
It's the issue.
So, anyway, Senator Tom Cotton there was talking about how weak Joe Biden's been on Russia. We're going to unpack a lot of that today with many of our awesome guests, including DeRoy Murdoch, who will be joining us in the 1 o'clock hour. But anyway, what was I just saying before that? Oh, primetime television. So I did have the Stinger. I don't know if I had it on this machine or not, or on a different one. I had the Stinger. I went and found that video of that woman because I knew it was a thing that actually happened. It was not from a fictional documentary or, a sitcom or a movie. It was actually real. And I found the whole clip on YouTube, And it's from like the late 80s or I don't even know how they got it on YouTube. I guess you can do that these days. And she's got kind of the coiffed 1980s hairstyle, you know. And the whole thing is like 5 minutes long. And someone was running, they got the B-roll basically from the newscast that day. And it's leading into the newscast, and they're just having all kinds of problems getting ready for this newscast. And she's getting more and more frustrated. And number one, I think it's pretty darn cool. You've got this woman anchor way before her time, really, before women anchors like ran television shows, right? And this is back in the 80s or the 90s, you know?
It says 80s. I have the clip.
This is in the 80s. And she's running the newscast, and like the prompter's messed up. And she doesn't have the material. And you should hear these guys in the background like, yes, miss. You know, like, okay, yeah, we're working on it. And she's like just berating them. And I love it because there's obviously something. They're having a bad day. The production people are having a bad day. We get it. We've all been there with radio. And she's just letting them have it. And at one point, she finally says the money line. She goes, we've got to get our freaking act together. This is primetime television, folks.
And she knows she's live?
No, but they're just running the B-roll. The cameras are on.
Okay, so they're recording it.
They're recording it.
I think they're setting up the shot. They're like they're trying to get everything together because quickly before
it's going to be on.
It's TV. Setting everything up.
It's freaking TV. It's not like us where, you know, could you imagine having I know we have the webcams on and stuff. We try to look reasonably presentable. But when you're on under the hot lights, I did some TV here in St. Louis for 4 or 5 years. I was a political analyst on a show that my old company produced. And you're under the lights and you gotta sit. A TV, man, is brutal. Especially now, 4K HDR.
Oh, man, yeah.
I mean, every movement, like, you could twitch, and it looks like you're, like, wiping your face off or something,
every
you know?
Every pore you have on your face is being seen.
Every hair on your head, like, the way you move. I would have to, like, I would stand up, I would sit, and here's a little trick. I'd sit on the back of my suit coat, and then I'd sit down. So everything was straight because every wrinkle looks like you just woke up out of bed, you know?
I mean, and Mark Cox, the
Mark
the
did
man,
it.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, the man of the hour. It's crazy to hear his stories on television. Ryan, you did television too, right? You wrote on television, you produced, and you were...
In local TV, I was behind the scenes, but I did some semi-national TV, which is... But that was very different than doing what Mark did.
Yeah.
Mark did morning television. Could you imagine?
And hearing his stories and comparing that life and that lifestyle to what we get to do today, like, this is... Radio's difficult. I mean, it's not easy to turn on a mic and be able to talk and be articulate, but that's a tough game. I mean, TV's a really tough game.
And so she's getting ready to do this newscast, and the problem with television is you prepare for, like, an hour to, like, do a five-minute bite. Like, you know, they're preparing for, like, an hour.
Sure.
And then they roll the cameras, like, tonight in New York City, there was a traffic accident on, you know, 5th and Broadway. All right, let's go to commercial. I mean, that's pretty... Yeah. And you do all that work with the lights and the hair and the skin tone and the and everything to do, like, these little short 5 to 6 minute news breaks, you know? So it's just brutal. Do you have the actual...
I have the full
clip. You have the full clip?
And I don't know if I trust
where
it
the
because
money,
I
yeah.
think there...
There's some lines
I
in
think
it.
There
it's
is.
Like Bill O'Reilly's.
See, I didn't think she cursed in this.
Maybe,
we don't know.
But we don't want to take
a
risk. Well, maybe during the break you can find the money line there. It's near the very end.
You know,
it's near the very end.
We took some risks yesterday, Tim, trying to find out what song was in Tim's head.
We did a whole segment at the end of the show. You can podcast it if you want to.
Yes.
Actually, you can still rewind on the Odyssey app because it's not 24 hours yet. It's the end of the show. The segment just starts with Tim going, what was the end credit song from Romancing the Stone?
Romancing the Stone.
We did a whole segment just trying to find the end
song. It was my favorite part of the day.
Yeah,
and then what we found out was Michael Douglas, Kathleen Turner, and Danny DeVito were in every movie in the 80s.
Yes.
Pretty much.
No kidding.
Yeah.
They must have. I bet they did really well with that one, which was like 1984. And so they just said, well, let's just keep casting them in every single movie and make a whole bunch of money.
Because people started reminding us on Twitter and probably on Facebook. I didn't have my Facebook page up. I do much more Twitter than I do anything else. Like, you got to pick one, you know, and I kind of do that. But that's good because we all have our different strokes for different folks. And then you have the YouTube channel, and they were chatting about it on there, and people were hitting me on Twitter, and they're like, yeah, what about Jewel of the Nile? What about War of the Roses? You know, and they're like, they were all in these movies.
And
so
the
funny.
Second Romancing the Stone, which apparently I don't remember at all, but it apparently did exist.
I think I remember it was terrible. Although, I think the worst sequel known to mankind, and we could probably have an entire show debating this topic, because I bet other people have difference of opinions, but the worst sequel following one of the best movies ever created, one of the best cult classics ever created, was Caddyshack 2 to Caddyshack.
Oh, gosh. Why would you ever make a Caddyshack 2?
I tried watching it. It's unwatchable.
Why would you do that?
You've seen Caddyshack, right?
Oh, actually, just recently I
watched it. Caddyshack is the most quotable, most watchable, funniest. I mean, it's hilarious. And then they did a 2, and you're thinking, okay, they should be able to pull off a 2, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Anchorman 2 was pretty darn good. Not as good as the first one, you know?
It's funny, though.
It's funny. But when you have something that's uber funny,
just let it
be. You just got to be half funny.
Yeah.
And Caddyshack 2 was like, it wasn't 1% as funny.
Oh, I kind of want to watch it.
Oh, but
sequels,
it's
they're very rare, I think. There are very rare good sequels.
Terminator 2.
Okay, Terminator.
Terminator 2 is one of the rare. It's way better than the first one.
But you know what I mean?
But you're right.
Like, mine, the one that always comes to mind, it's so stupid, but it's one of my favorite trilogies, is Shrek. Shrek 2 was easily better than Shrek 1. I know, it's crazy.
No argument. No,
but
no
it
argument.
Was great. There, you hardly ever come across, maybe A Quiet Place 2 was
No, it wasn't
equal.
Better. Okay. It was good, but I don't think it was as good.
But that, you hardly ever come across a sequel that is as great or better than the first.
It aggravates me when they start doing these beyond sequels. They get to the third and fourth movie, and they won't use the numbers. They start calling it Shrek Ever After or Shrek Forever.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, when I go back, not that there's anything wrong with the movie, I don't know where to put it in my head.
Yeah,
I'm
where in the timeline is this?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Where does that go?
Especially if they jump around in the actual like timeline of the world. You're like, okay, now you really lost
where
it.
Where am I at?
Where is this? It's easier. It's harder to do with a live action too, because all the actors are getting older. So if you have to do prequels, they have to look younger. But with animation, I have no idea what this is.
Yeah. Anything is possible if you just believe.
At least with the really bad campy ones, at least they keep the numbers. Like Halloween is always like, it's Halloween 12. You know,
Or then they just reboot it and they're like, well, that's the new. We're just calling it Halloween again now.
I don't know if I've ever watched any of those movies.
They're
maybe
good.
Maybe by accident.
Good.
I remember in the late 80s at a slumber party or something.
Mm-hmm.
Man, they put on a Freddy movie. I wasn't allowed to watch that stuff. Somebody put on a Freddy movie.
Ugh.
They're like sticking a Q-tip all the way through this guy's face.
Can't talk about it.
I was like, this is, I mean, I still remember it now. It was that
horrifying.
Traumatic. Like, I can never watch these.
Yeah. I watched the Nightmare on Elm Streets because I could watch those because they had an element more. I couldn't watch just the straight out gore, the real life gore. But if you add an element of science fiction to it, then I'm okay with it.
What about like, Jeepers Creepers?
That just sounds bad.
Whoa,
I watched that one.
It was terrifying.
That was rough.
Me. Oh, it was bad.
That was rough. The ending is like, oh my gosh. Let's just end the world.
Yes.
I don't know that I've ever watched this. So the one that I don't know, the one I don't know that I've ever rewatched, The Exorcist, the original.
Oh, whoa, that's a.
I watched it once, and I'm like, I don't ever need to see that again.
Same. That hits too close to home. That is a very real and scary fear of mine. And The Exorcism was just like, I don't want
And can I tell
to
you what made
this.
It more real for me? I had 2 degrees of separation from that movie. When I was in college at Fordham University in New York, my resident director was an old Jesuit priest. I'll have to look up his name. He was in the movie. He was a consultant to the movie.
Wow.
And he lived in our dorm. And so the fact that and one of the brothers that taught me at SLU High, we had brothers, we had fathers, priests, and we had brothers, you know, who weren't quite priests. It was a different order, you know. One of the brothers that taught me at SLU High, he knew the story because it happened at Alexian Brothers Hospital here in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
Like, The Exorcist is set. It happened in St. Louis. They set it in Washington, D.C.
I think the Glover show.
They did a whole,
early on,
they did a whole shebang on it. Yeah.
Glover interviewed the priest that was involved in it or something who's from St. Louis. He may be dead now because this was kind of early on the Glover show.
God, that's terrible.
So if you rewatch The Exorcist, which I won't, but if you rewatch The Exorcist, there's a scene in the middle-ish later in the movie where there's a bunch of the priests and the advisors sitting around a conference room table at a library in Georgetown University. And the older priest with the white hair back, swept back, I knew him personally, and I'll have to look up who he was, but he is a Jesuit father who lived and worked at Fordham University when I was there.
Oh,
so that
tense.
Just gave me chills because I'm like,
freaky. You know?
And the other one that I have watched again, but freaks me out every single, The Shining.
Yeah, yeah.
With the hotel and Jack Nicholson.
Apparently they made a sequel to The Shining.
They did.
Just recently. Yeah. I just discovered this.
I
haven't seen it.
It's something, I'll look it up. I saw it. It was amazing.
Or as the Scotsman in The Simpsons says, hey, The Shining.
Yeah, get The Shining. We didn't want to get sued.
Hey, we got a big show today. I promise we'll talk politics, public policy, so on and so forth. We're going to be joined by Ben Brown. Next, he's so happy because something happened in Jefferson City yesterday he'll tell us about. DeRoy Murdoch in our 1 o'clock hour. Adam Schuster and Wildman Nick Schroer in our 2 o'clock hour. Lots ahead here on the Annie Fry Show. Tim Jones in the big chair all week this week here at 97.1 FM Talk.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Dr. Fauci funneled the money to the lab through his friend, Dr. Peter Daszak. They have both been cheerleaders, especially Dr. Daszak, for the animal theory, the natural theory of the virus. I guarantee you, when this thing first broke, both Dr. Fauci and Dr. Daszak both thought to themselves, oh my God, we gave taxpayer money to the Wuhan lab. What if they did gain-of-function research, as it's been done 11 times since 1992, and the virus escaped? Now, that, I'm not saying it did or didn't, but they both should have stood up and said, wait a minute, I've got a conflict of interest here. I gave them money.
Yeah.
We didn't supervise them, and I'm the wrong person to weigh in on this subject.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if that happened or not either, but what Senator Kennedy just said there, that is a very plausible explanation for why the scientific community, the bureaucrats in Washington, D.C., freaked out and tried to divert the American people's attention away from anything but what the truth may have happened, right? I'm not saying that happened. That's really good speculation based on all the mountains of circumstantial evidence and some direct evidence in Fauci's emails that has come out. Meanwhile, we're being told by Fauci and the gang, nope, we're still searching for that COVID turducken out there that was created in the Wuhan lab. And that we gave coronavirus to, it's darn turduckens, right? I mean, that's what they keep saying. You know, how many things, and every single time that I or Annie or Mark Cox or Mark Reardon or anybody else had any sort of like, you know, I'm not sure about that, you know, some prognostication that came down from on high, every time that we look sideways at it, some lunatic liberal, you just want people to die, you know, that's what we got. You're a conspiracy theorist. Well, how many conspiracy theories are coming true in the last few weeks?
Man, it's to the point where you're like, you get to the point where no matter what you're saying, the louder people are screaming against it, the more you're like, oh, well, maybe this is true then.
Because yeah, right.
They yell loud. Right.
That's what happens when you politicize a pandemic instead of just truly following the data and the science. And I know another fella who was so aggravated at the lack of data and science that was used to lock down this region, especially in the county of St. Louis. He joins us now for an update on all that and so much more. Our first guest of the afternoon is Ben Brown, no stranger to these airwaves, the owner of Satchmo's Barn Grill out in Chesterfield, the chairman of the Franklin County GOP Central Committee. He's at Ben Brown Tweets on Twitter. Ben, good afternoon. Welcome back to 97.1. Great to have you on today.
Good afternoon, Tim.
So, Ben, just to remind folks, you were at the very beginning of this pandemic as one of the voices of more sanity and rationality, I think, that stepped forward. In the beginning, you weren't questioning anything that any of the elected leaders were doing as far as what they said was the data and the science, and you were just trying to figure out how to keep your people employed, not keep your restaurant open. And so you contacted me, and we weren't working on anything relating to lockdowns or restrictions at that time other than trying to figure out how you could sell drink by the glass out the door, because that's one of the signature items over at Satchmo's, is your craft cocktails. And we, long story short, you and I and others jumped in, and we got the governor's office to do that executive order, and suddenly Ben Brown, the activist, was born, right?
Oh, absolutely. I kind of went down a rabbit hole with you there. Like you mentioned in the beginning, there's a lot of unknowns, and you know, we put our trust in the public health officials because we all want to do our part to do what's best for the community. But over time, things evolved, and it started becoming more and more clear that a lot of these decisions, they weren't based on science or what's best for the community, and a lot of them were being made for political reasons.
And Ben, I think one of your biggest problems was, you know, the left likes to scream about unfairness and inequity and discrimination, whether it exists or not. You were experiencing real life, provable discrimination, right? And that's why I think you got more active and involved and frustrated, was that your little bar and grill, family-owned restaurant, was being told it was a danger to society and had to be locked down and had all these restrictions. But Ben, right next to you, probably literally right next to you in the strip center you're in, there's larger stores and big boxes across the way and all that. And everybody was allowed to walk willy-nilly through those without hardly any restrictions at all.
Absolutely. It was extremely frustrating. And, you know, it was kind of insulting also when you have people from the St. Louis County, Sam Page, his administration was coming out and directly telling us that we're going to have to lock you down because of the increase in hospitalizations. But they'd also tell you that over half the hospitalizations were coming from other counties where restaurants remained open. They even came out and would tell you directly most of these new cases are coming from small gatherings and homes. So they closed down restaurants. We're an industry where preserving public health, it's built into how we operate our businesses day in and day out, long before the pandemic came along. And to close those and force people into small gatherings and homes, it didn't make any sense. Even Dr. Alex Garza, who heads the task force here, came out weeks before this and said that shutting down restaurants wouldn't make much of a difference because it was too widespread in the community. And it's just amazing how these medical opinions change when they're being viewed through a political lens versus when we just have the information provided to us directly.
Ben, it's really good to be talking to you because I've watched your story and the story of your business, Satchmo's, for months and months now as you've been kind of in the news. But that's what I wanted to ask you about, you know, because you were in the news. A lot of businesses and especially restaurants were choosing to do what you did, but do it a little quietly. You were saying outspoken like this is wrong. Do you think that Sam Page, do you think that the officials made you an example, that they went after you harder because of that?
Oh, absolutely, 100%. And I mean, it's really undeniable when you think back to December 1st when Senator Koenig held a press conference in front of my restaurant and I came out there, I gave a speech and said, you know, what we're experiencing now is restaurants being used as a scapegoat by a politician who ran on a platform of his COVID response, and he can't control human behavior where the spread's actually occurring, so he's targeting us. Within hours, we had the health department at my restaurant saying they're pulling our permit, and they cited us as a hazard to public health. Now, you look up the definition of hazard to public health, it's defined as a restaurant transmitting a disease through food. That has nothing to do with what was going on. And when our attorney even confronted the health department about that, they actually said that it didn't matter if it was an unlawful suspension because they would amend the charge mid-hearing until they found something to get us with.
Wow.
It's just been a really eye-opening experience.
And so, Ben, you tried to do your best to make lemonade out of all these lemons, right? And luckily, Ben, we've got a lot of great elected officials here in the St. Louis region and all of our collar counties who paid attention. How wonderful is it, Ben, that you know we have a citizen legislature, which I think is the best kind of legislature to have, of actual citizens who have, you know, Many of these folks I'm about to mention have and do run their own businesses. They sign the front of the check versus, you know, the backs of checks. They've got to live and work in the community, and they probably understood exactly what you're going through, and they stepped up. People like Senators Bob Onder and Bill Eigel and Andrew Koenig and Representatives John Wieman and Phil Christofanelli and Nick Schroer and Derek Greyer, and I'm gonna leave a bunch of them out because so many of them, Ben, came to your aid and said, "Wait a minute, this is a huge miscarriage of justice." They filed legislation. They worked on it all session long. Long story short, you went up and testified a ton of times. You got it through. And Ben, what happened yesterday that was the culmination of all that hard work and citizen activism?
Yesterday was a great day. You know, the sun was shining. It was almost like God was smiling down on us. It was amazing. I was honored to join citizens and legislators from across the state as Governor Parson signed HB 271 into law, and this effectively ended one-man rule in St. Louis County once and for all, and also sent a very clear message to any would-be tyrants across the state of Missouri.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So the governor happily signed that bill. Ben, and again, for those who are screaming and yelling local control, I would about this bill. The opponents of this bill say, "Oh, you're taking local control away from our public health authorities who know best over a bunch of crazy, you know, conservative legislators. You know, how dare they get involved?" But Ben, this actually expands local control with a check and balance system that the county council, the Democrats and Republicans, and it's a majority Democratic county council right now, the county council will now have some lawful say into any future decisions that a tyrant like Lord Page happens to do if there's ever a future pandemic or problem like this down the line.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, that I always find that argument so ironic because Sam Page is actually the one who ended local control when he claimed that drawing upon a state statute allowed him to overstep how the county charter lays out how you enact public health orders. They're supposed to be recommended by the health department and voted upon by the county council. This isn't giving power to the state legislature. This restores power to the county council, the local legislative body. And if you think about it, the county council, they're the ones that are really the most direct representatives of the diverse communities throughout the county that they represent.
Yeah, absolutely. Could not agree more with that. So, Ben, you know, not only did you get involved as a citizen activist, you've actually decided to devote more of your time, and I imagine your treasure as well, to various things in the political world. You've become I know you were already involved with the Young Republicans out in Franklin County and the state of Missouri in general, and now you're the chairman of the Franklin County GOP Central Committee, which is great, and so you're involved on the state level as well. And, Ben, you decided to go ahead and take the ultimate step and actually run for political office. And you've announced for a political office. What has that decision, what is that decision, Ben? What is the decision you finally made?
So I made the decision to run for state senate in District 26, which will be open seat in 2022. The last year, it's really realigned my priorities, just not only with what's happened locally, but what you see across the country. And, you know, a year ago, my priority was on growing my business. We had grown it year after year before the pandemic, and we were looking at potentially expanding to a second, maybe even a third location in 2020, 2021. Obviously, that kind of went out the window. And, you know, now things are getting a little bit back to normal. I had a decision to make. Am I going to get back to trying to just grow my business and focus on enriching myself? That was my goal, really, just because I thought that was the best way to provide for my family and for my children's future. But providing financially, I don't think it's not enough anymore. I'm a little more concerned about the world I want them to grow up in. And just by running a restaurant or even expanding and running two or three restaurants, that's not going to do it. I feel like, you know, it might not be as beneficial to me personally, but I feel like there's bigger things at stake. And I feel like that's really where I need to be putting my time after everything I've seen.
Oh, fantastic. Folks, you can follow Ben's mission, his new mission at BenBrownForSenate.com. Ben, I believe you're the only announced candidate for the open seat right now, right, as far as we know?
Yes, that is correct.
Yeah, very good.
You hear murmurs about this person might get in, that person might get in, but I'm the only person right now. As you mentioned, I'd like to learn more about me or donate at BenBrownForSenate.com. One thing I've learned is that it takes definitely a team effort just to get elected also. So if anyone wants to see me continue this fight in the Senate, if you'd like to go on there and chip in $20, $30, $50, any little bit helps.
BenBrownForSenate.com. Folks, a true story of Mr. Brown goes to Jefferson City. I think this is fantastic. A guy who was not that involved politically a year ago. Here's some good that came out of a really bad situation. At Ben Brown tweets as well. Ben, I really respect and admire you for all that you've done for not just the people that work for you over and your customers at Satchmo's, but for the St. Louis region, Eastern Missouri in general, and ultimately the state, because I think this will ultimately benefit the state down the line. So, Ben, great job getting involved. Well done on a great success yesterday with the governor signing that anti-COVID tyranny bill. I wish you all the best in your future endeavors.
Well, thank you. I appreciate them.
Yeah, we'll talk to you again soon, I'm sure. Take care, Ben.
Bye.
All right, Ben Brown. There he goes. At Ben Brown tweets, BenBrownForSenate.com. Great young man. We need more people like him who are getting involved in politics for, I think, the right reasons.
Up and down the line.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, real genuine individual. So, wish him all the best. Hey, we're going to get to a break now. Happy to take your phone calls, if you like, on the other side. We have an open segment. Ryan and I may discuss a couple things. And we may have that sounder I've been telling you about primetime television. We'll have that as well. 314-241-9797. Oh, Joe Biden. Oh, I've got a great little 20-second clip here I can play as well, Katie, when we come back. Joe Biden just had his meeting with Putin, and you're not going to believe what he said when he addressed reporters. It's kind of just more of the same, but the fact that he gets away with saying this just shows you how morally bankrupt the worldwide media truly is. All that and more when we come back here at 97.1 FM Talk.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's about a mutual self-interest. I'll take your questions, and as usual, folks, they gave me a list of the people I'm going to call on. So, Jonathan,
can you believe that? They gave me a list of people to call on. Could you imagine? Do you believe we're hearing that from the president of the United States after Donald Trump used to do impromptu press conferences on his way to the helicopter every day?
He's speaking live right now. We were listening to it in the break just to see, you know, what he was talking about. It's basically nothing, which is why we're not airing it. But it's amazing that just listening to him for what, maybe a minute and a half that we just were, we could have pulled 3 or 4 different clips out of there just to make you see how terrible he sounds as he's talking. And that was in the minute and a half. Like, let alone, like, what kind of crazy gaffes are going to come out of this whole thing? We could play them all day. I mean, Donald Trump did that one time and it was news. This guy does it every day, multiple times a day, and you can't keep up with it because it's so bad.
And in the 30 seconds we listened to it, I don't know how many lies he repeated, but he repeated,
well, that's true too, yeah.
He repeated the January 6th lie that the rioters killed a police officer. That's been debunked.
Completely.
But like Katie said, it doesn't matter once it's out. Once hands up, don't shoot is out there, then it's hands up, don't shoot.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And somebody must have said that somewhere, and it was racist, and it was systemic racism and police brutality. And police are running around like Yosemite Sam gunning down black Americans in the streets of our major cities every single day, if you believe the media. Well, but that doesn't happen. It happens rarely, thank God. And also, more white people are killed every year. More unarmed white people are killed every year than unarmed black people. The fact that I just said that probably just enraged any of the liberals that listen to the station. I know they do. Yes, more unarmed white people were killed last year than unarmed black people. I believe the stats are approximately, because I've looked at this a number of times. It's basically in my head. 24 white unarmed individuals were killed by police in 2020. 18 blacks, 16 Hispanics.
I think that's correct, because I was going to say the same thing about 18. I remember
it's
18.
Right around there.
Yeah, and it's killed by guns, right?
Killed by a police officer with a gun, and the other person's unarmed.
Yeah.
50 million police encounters.
That's incredible.
50 million police encounters. Everything from speeding ticket.
Sure.
Well, let's go lower. Parking ticket to felony manhunts, okay, and everything in between. 50 million police encounters. I believe the number under that is like 10 million or 15 million actual arrests. And the number under that, then, you go down to shootings in general, where they're having a shootout where mm-hmm. everybody's got guns. And that's a higher number. Well, you expect that to be.
Of course.
If you shoot at a police officer, they're going to shoot back and you're probably going to die. It's just the way it works. Don't shoot at a police officer. You know, simple. No one dies. But then you go to unarmed, and those are horrific incidences. They're all tragedies. They're all based on noncompliance of a lawful order in general, I would say. But out of that number, out of that 50 million, 10 million, thousands of gunfire incidents, you get down to less than 50 individuals in the entire nation of 330 million people getting killed by police officers, and the majority are white. So there is no systemic racism in law enforcement in this country. I feel confident saying that.
I wonder, and I bet this has been done, but if you were to take one of those, you know, on the ground crews out on the streets of a city and ask people on the street questions, say, how many people do you think were killed unarmed by police officers? I bet 99 out of 100 would guess that it was more than that.
Thousands. They would say thousands, right?
At least.
Tens of thousands.
I think some people would say tens of thousands. But down into below 50, that's 2019, right? Is that probably the most recent?
2019. They may have 2020, but I think you're right. I think it was 2018 or 2019 stats.
Yeah, because I remember looking
FBI
at that last
crime
year.
Stats.
Yes. That the perception is so far off from the reality.
And that's what they want it to be.
They absolutely do.
That's the narrative they're driving. And you know what that does? That divides society in an inappropriate, in an injustice type of manner. So Joe Biden is taking, he just admitted, isn't it funny how moments of clarity that he has, where he flat out says, all right, I'm ready for my pre-prepared questions from pre-selected reporters that I have pre-delineated answers that I will now give. What a joke. Doesn't that sound like state-run propaganda media to you?
It's crazy.
Add that to the fact that he constantly is going, well, I'm going to get in trouble for saying this.
Yes.
Well, who's telling you? Who's pulling these strings, man?
Who is running the government if it's not you, bro?
Right.
Is there any logical reason besides him being friendly with the media to have a list of people that he knows these are the people I'm going to? Is there any other logical reason besides I just want to call on friendly media that he would have a list for?
I think it's to keep him on script.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. His people are scared of his answers.
Yes. And they want to know. I don't know. Does he know the questions ahead of time, or just the people?
I think he knows the subject.
Oh, he does know the subject.
I think he does. That press conference he gave, he knew the subject. Remember the color-coded cards he had and all the post-it notes and stuff?
Oh, he's angry about something right now.
Yes. Oh, yeah, he is.
Oh, you want to pull it up? Yeah, who's he lecturing?
Their behavior is that the rest of the world reacts to them and it diminishes their standing in the world. I'm not confident of anything. Just stating a fact.
But given his past behavior has not changed, and in that press conference, after sitting down with you for several hours,
she's from CNN.
He denied any involvement in cyber attacks.
He's getting grilled on Putin.
He even refused to say Alexei Navalny's name. So how does that account to a constructive meeting as President Putin?
Right? You don't understand that. You're in your own business.
To the question. That was a decent question.
That was sexist.
She's from CNN.
Yeah.
That was Caitlin Collins.
Misogynistic. So Joe Biden just getting raked over the coals for some real journalists who are apparently asking real journalistic questions. Basically, the argument during Trump's reign was that he was Putin's puppet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who could be more of Putin's puppet now than Joe Biden, who has ended or is trying to end America's energy independence while he promotes Russia's energy independence by allowing them to have a pipeline by canceling ours? One of many examples I can give you where Joe Biden has been much more of a puppet of Putin than Donald Trump ever was.
And what's crazy is that, you know, the relationship between Trump and Putin was always frowned upon. Everybody thought that they were too close. Not everyone, but, you know, the mainstream
media. Two big macho alpha males.
Everyone thought that they were buddy-buddy. And now Biden's coming out and he's acting kind of chummy with Putin.
Yes.
And nobody's
really. They all
really
do it.
And CNN doesn't give a hoot. And all we heard about for 4 years was how chummy Trump and Putin were, when actually Trump was putting on the heat to the guy.
Do you remember when Obama and Hillary Clinton got in trouble? Obama was caught in a hot mic moment whispering to Medvedev,
yeah,
who was Putin's right-hand man, mm-hmm, hey, when I get elected, we're going to be able to do a lot more than we, you know, could. I just got to get through this next election. We're going to be a lot more flexible, we're going to massage this better. He said something like that. And Hillary Clinton was famous for, we're just going to hit the reset button with Russia. And everybody had the jokes, the big memes, the big red reset button. The fact that Joe Biden, the leader of the free world, after being in office for 40, 50 years, can't go out and do unscripted questions with a press conference about a meeting he just freaking had is unbelievable. You would think he'd be much more capable. You think he'd be much more ready for the big screen than that.
This is prime time television here, folks.
Yeah, you would think.
Hey, there it is.
There she is. I'm so happy. Thank you, Katie.
You're welcome. And Jake did a great job cutting that up.
Thank you, Jake. Thank you, Jake. Always
Thanks,
on
Jake.
It. Hey, Katie and Ryan and I will be back with two more hours of this extravagant brilliance in this commentary as we continue to follow this. I think CNN's like their hair is on fire right now after that. That was a CNN reporter, I think, that was just raking Biden over, and he did not want any more of her, did he?
Yep.
He was walking away. That's what was interesting about it. You could tell that was not part of the plan.
If you don't understand this, he says to that reporter, then you're in the wrong business.
Bye.
If Trump had done that, oh, he's such a racist. No, he's sexist. He'd be a sexist today. Sorry. Got to get your iss right. We got lots more Annie Fry Show straight ahead, including DeRoy Murdoch at 97.1 FM Talk.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.